Joining us now in our studios is Superintendent of Schools, Dr. Matt Hillman. Good morning. How are you doing today, Matt?
I am doing very well, Jeff.
You look like you're dressed appropriately to the weather.
Yep. You know, when we cancel school, I ditch the tie and, you know, go with the sweater vest. So
The weather, of course, is the big story, and it has been this week. We really have two different back-to-back weather systems, one with the snow and one with the cold. And I guess we can start off by snow. And we can talk about also 21st century. They're getting a whole lot better at predicting stuff, they being weather people, meteorologists and such. So much of this stuff you can really see coming, and you can accurately gauge, hey, tomorrow it's going to be bad. It doesn't start until this time. It ends at this time. You can go ahead and cancel school earlier than you normally would.
You know, Jeff, I actually had a good conversation with my mentor Chris Richardson yesterday, discussing this week, and Chris, of course, superintendent for 35 years, has seen pretty much everything. You know, but we agree over the past 5 or so years, there's been really a shift. I mean, it used to be you would never call school until the morning, and part of it is exactly what you said. You know, the forecast actual being different, which it still is. There are swings and misses, you know, from time to time. We always would prefer to call things in the morning, but we also know there's trending toward trying to make some decisions when you can, the night before, because families have a lot of things that they have to do to make it work if we have to cancel school. So while that's not something we're able to do every time, when we do have data from the National Weather Service where they're confident, and we have a great relationship with the Weather Service. In fact, I want to give them a shout out on the air because, you know, they're federal employees. And they're considered essential employees. So they worked during the record federal government shutdown and were not paid. And yet they were still generating great data and information for weather decision makers in Minnesota. They routinely run webinars. In fact, they ran one yesterday for you can log on. You can hear them explain what they're thinking of the forecast. I have actually called their office at 4 a.m. and a meteorologist answers, and I will say, okay, here's what I'm seeing. What's the level of confidence in this? And they're very, very specific about that kind of forecast. And so the data is getting better. It's not perfect. When we do make a call the night before, Jeff, what I just want to make sure folks know is that we do that with the best of intention. Yesterday, no regrets on that. Even though it wasn't as much snow as they thought, there was enough blowing and drifting. Everybody knows just things were a mess, and especially in the rural areas, until well past the time we could have done a 2-hour late. So, but when we do make a call the night before, there is a risk for a swing and a miss. And I think that we're continuing to work at how we balance that. You know, we always make the best decision we can with the information that we have at the time, with our goal of being safety, of course, the primary goal, and then a secondary piece of always trying to balance, because we know when we cancel or change the schedule, it's a real inconvenience for parents, especially those who have both parts of the household working outside the home. And so there's a number of factors we consider, but no regrets on yesterday. We didn't get as much snow as they said, but as we all know, it was still a pretty big mess.
Today, right now, 10 below, and, you know, it's kind of still out there, so it's not that bad. Hey, why isn't there school? Well, wait a few hours. When the temp continues to drop throughout the day, that northwest wind's going to start, or northeastern wind's going to start blowing in, and we've got, within a few hours, we're going to have wind chill factors of 30, 40, 50, maybe even 60 below zero.
So we kicked around a number of ideas yesterday in terms of, it was pretty apparent, it wasn't the reasonable person says not okay to send kids, you know, to school today. We had talked about, hey, is there a way we could maybe get students in for the day, and announce the night before that we'd dismiss 2 hours early. We talked about that a little bit, some strategies just to try to get kids to school. You know, however, you know, the wind chill warning was originally supposed to start at 3 o'clock, but they've backed that up now, as KYMN weather specialist Bob Matheson told us, to noon. So, you know, the fact is that, you know, we're not talking about a general good old-fashioned Minnesota. This is dangerous, you know, and so we're talking about at pickup time today, we are looking at around negative 40 to negative 43 with the wind chill, according to the Weather Service. You're now inside the 10-minute range for frostbite to occur to exposed skin. And so while I think we all think back, oh, in my day, you know, we never closed school. It was never. Remember, the wind chill is also, quote unquote, warmer than it used to be. Because if you remember, what is it, about 10, 12 years ago, they changed the wind chill. So if you can go to the Carleton weather site, They actually have a weather station, and it gives you the old wind chill, and you'd see that that's actually colder, you know, than what this one is. And so it's just one of those things when you think about especially a kindergartner or a first grader, we want to make sure kids are safe, and so and we're not alone. I mean, I think every school district in Minnesota has called off both today and tomorrow, because whoever thought you could say, well, the bottom's going to drop out of negative 40. The bottom's going to drop out of negative 40, and tomorrow morning at around pickup time, it's going to hit a low of negative 57 at 2 a.m., and then at around pickup time, we'll be looking at temperatures between negative 50 and 52, or 54 and 52. So the good news is that, you know, Minnesota students traditionally perform very well on one strand of, well, on lots of strands in international mathematics competitions, but we're expert at negative numbers because this is how we learn it. But, you know, as I mentioned before, off the air, tomorrow on Wednesday, we're going to try something new. It's a piloted attempt called a flexible learning day. And so what this means, and there's several other districts around us who have done this, Farmington has been using this strategy for a couple of years. You've got districts like Kenyon-Wanamingo and Goodhue and Zumbrota-Mazeppa, New Prague, Tri-City United, who have used this approach. They call it different things, but essentially what it is that we're going to deliver activities to students. They've been sent out to elementary students. Families have already received what we call activity matrices. I showed you this on the air. There's about 16 different activities that students can pick from in various areas, and they pick two from the reading and writing category. They pick one from mathematics and science, one from social-emotional, and one from create. Now, one of the options is build a snow person or a snow structure. For snow, that's fine. It's not safe to do that tomorrow, so we're not going to, of course, that's a choice in there, but this is something we would use over and over again. So students get a chance to pick those pieces. They parents just check off what they did. Sometimes we ask them to send an email with a picture. In fact, I had a kindergarten parent yesterday email one of our teachers saying, I know the flexible learning day isn't until Wednesday, but my daughter wanted to play school, so we thought we would try it. And she sent in the pictures of the activities that this kindergartner did. She gave us an estimate of how long it took, because that's something we're just not exactly sure of right now. And then our secondary students, our middle school and high school students, tomorrow morning by 9 a.m., their teachers will be posting activities for the day. Our goal is having teachers to put an activity out that's about 20 minutes long, just because we're not exactly sure how, you know, how you plan for something. Some kids are going to take longer, some kids are going to take less. And some of the things we've learned with people who've gone before us is don't overestimate or don't underestimate how long activities take that adults plan. And so, again, it's a pilot. We're going to ask for feedback afterwards. This is the wave of the future. We know that this is where we are going. There will be things that will go really well with this, like the email I got from a kindergarten teacher yesterday sharing the activities that one of her students did already. And then there will be things that we aren't as good, and that's okay, because we know this is a long-term solution for us. We want to figure out how does it work here in Northfield and what can we do to make it better. So it's exciting. Flexible Learning Day information is on our website for families. It's right at the top. You can click the link and see the instructions there.
The future of this, we're talking about this in the context of a snow day or a weather day. Is that the only situation that might come into effect? Would you see this implemented in some other scenario?
No, there are a couple of other scenarios where we could see it implemented. One would be potentially when we have, for example, our juniors every year take an ACT test, and it takes most of the day, and we really can't have students in the area where those students are taking that ACT test during the day. So for a statewide testing, it might be a strategy that we use there. Possible that we could use it in the past when our athletic teams have made the state tournament. There's some tremendous community pride, and a lot of students go to those events, possibly to use it there. So we've experimented with it a little bit in the past, but this will be the most intentional way that we've done that. And again, all on our website, we invite feedback, and again, I think it will grow from there.
Once again, we're talking with the superintendent of schools, Matt Hillman. Let's move into last night's school board meeting. You did meet despite the cold. Hopefully everybody stayed warm enough because you got some things in. Let's start off with FFA, the Future Farmers of America. You had a presentation yesterday.
Yeah, so we had a presentation from the FFA. Actually, I've learned maybe 30 years ago they stopped calling it Future Farmers of America. And so it's actually the FFA organization. And you know, we're really proud of the FFA arrangement that we have, because In the early 1990s, Northfield Schools had to drop its agricultural program. It was just something that, I graduated college in 1994, so I obviously wasn't here for that, but my understanding is that enrollment in that program dwindled, and it was just not something that the school district could sustain. Not uncommon. You have a good program, and runs its course, and there aren't enough students who still want to participate in that where we are able to offer it on our own. Went away for a couple of years, and then Ed Terry, who just a fantastic instructor over at Randolph, there was a student in Northfield who wanted to have an ag program, and thus Northfield Schools and Randolph Schools created a partnership that has lasted since 1994. And so we actually have students who go to Randolph for the first couple hours of the school day, and they participate. It's less than 20 students. What we're proud to offer that collaboration, that's not something that happens with every school district, that there's this opportunity for collaboration. And so we're real proud of that program that allows students to participate in agricultural education and FFA. And we had three Northfield alumni, John Peterson, Derek Easterm, and Tasha Evans, who presented last night along with Ed Terry and some of our current students. And they just shared the various things that are happening with the Northfield and Randolph relationship. About 25% of the students enrolled in the Randolph Ag program are Northfield students, which is really great. They also just talked about a number of the different kinds of activities that they do in terms of fundraising activities and other kinds of things like that. They actually have, interesting, a 1960 graduate, Jim Tracy, who passed away in 2014. He actually donated his 360-acre farm outside of Denison to the Minnesota FFA Foundation. And the Randolph FFA got 60 acres of that, in which they farm. They plant corn and soybeans there. The students manage that program, of course, with some support from some adults. Great learning experience, very authentic, for kids to learn that. We all know that Northfield in this area has tremendous roots in agriculture, and a lot of our local economy is still dependent upon agriculture. So having these opportunities for students in this partnership with Randolph is just fantastic. One of the things that I think is really impressive, over the last 40 years, Randolph FFA with our Northfield students have participated in something called the Corn Drive for Camp Courage. And so it's where farmers bring in some corn and it's sold, and that money is given to Camp Courage, which is a camp to help students with some disabilities. They've raised $300,000 over that time by the Randolph chapter alone. So again, what FFA does is, people might think it's about farming. Yes, farming is one piece, but there's a lot of leadership opportunities that these students learn in terms of public speaking, business acumen in terms of the accounting side of agriculture, innovation, a number of things that you might think of FFA as, oh, that's farming. It's much more than that, and so we're really proud to have had them at our meeting last night.
Yeah, and hats off to Ed Terry. Boy, he's been doing this for almost 50 years.
Yes.
Before you were even born, this guy was teaching FFA.
Pretty darn close.
Yeah, and he has... The vibrancy and the vitality of the FFA program that we have here locally in Randolph and Northfield is directly attributed to him, and the energy and everything that he has brought to the table for a half century. I can't believe he's still doing it, but it's better than ever now.
And again, making a substantial difference, with kids. And the fact that alumni wanted to come back to talk about it, that tells you what people think about the program.
We need to move on. We're running short on time here already. I want to talk about the financial forecast and the budget, the general fund budget plan for the next school year.
Yeah, so every January it's part of our financial management plan, which, good financial management is about checking the system every few times a year. In fact, Val Mertzdorf, our finance director, is actually teaching the process that she uses to 60-some new school business officials at the MASBO conference coming up next week. So very exciting in terms of that, and Val is a master of this. So when we look at this time of the year, we're trying to forecast the number of different pieces. We're trying to take a look at what do we think the legislature might provide for any kind of funding increase. I won't go into my rant about keeping up with inflation. You've heard that before. See previous conversations. We're looking at some expenditure assumptions. We do contract negotiations every year with various employee groups. This year it's our teachers, so we're looking at what are we trying to assume for those kinds of increases. We're looking at things like increase for non-salary utilities and supplies, We're also trying to anticipate our revenue. We have a very large senior class graduating this year. It's the largest we've had in some time, and we are showing a smaller than expected kindergarten class. Now, we've had increased enrollment for 8 years in a row, and we're looking as if it's going to start to taper off a bit. And that's okay, but that's exactly why we do this now, is because we're looking ahead. We're trying to make sure that as we enter the planning season for next school year that we're being judicious. You know, we're making sure that we don't spend more than what we need to run the program. And this financial forecast is one, it's just one part of a four-part cycle that finishes in December with the audit report. We talked about that in December. Starts all over again with a financial projection in January. And then what we do is we look at the adopted budget in the April-June timeframe. We do the audit report, then we always revise our budget, and then the whole thing starts over. So one of the things that we are looking at, as you know, our fund balance is a very important piece, and we're always making sure we look at that to keep that above 16%. And there's a lot of decisions that happen every year to make that we're going to, looks like we'll end next year above that point. And then we just really need some help from the legislature, because despite our Northfield community, who has been so supportive, they cannot make up with the operating levy what has been left on the table with inflation over the years. And so we are in a much better spot than nearly any other school district. But it is still a piece that while we think, okay, we are in a very good financial position, but it takes a lot of work and some tough decision-making to stay that way.
All right. Let's move on. Technology services, you got an update there.
Yes, Director of Technology Services, Kim Brisky, she shared some data from a staff survey that we had this fall, 2 years ago, not this fall, but a fall before we transitioned all of our staff from traditional desktop computers to laptop computers. And, of course, with that kind of change, there are challenges with change, and some of it was some true technical nature kinds of things, and some other what I would consider that are part of the change process. So we looked at teacher satisfaction in the fall of 2017 versus the fall of 2018, substantial increase in that area. That's great. We're really proud of our staff, how they've adapted to mobile technology, and still room for growth, but really proud there. And then it's time to talk about our student devices. Our student device leases are up at the end of the year, and so Kim has got a group of 36 staff members who are coming together to look at what's the next thing that we might want to do with our student devices, keeping within the parameters of the finances that we have right now. Again, that comes from our capital budget, not our general fund operating budget. And so really a lot of data says that people really still like our iPads. They want to keep going forward, but we're also exploring whether a Chromebook might be something specifically at the high school level, looking at that. And so really diving into that, they were supposed to have a meeting yesterday. Of course, that got canceled, but they continue to plan to work through that. They have a survey that they're going to share with families, going to do some focus group pieces, and also get some student feedback, hopefully making a recommendation later this spring.
So is the competition between just Apple and Google Chrome, are there other players within that you might be looking at?
You know, really, frankly, it is about if you're talking about a tablet device, the iPad is the tablet that we would look at. And if we're looking at a Chrome device, the Chromebook is what we're looking at. Because the iPad is now down to $299, and you can get a touchscreen Chromebook for probably $325 or so.
Mm-hmm.
We've had some feedback to say, well, it's time just to go to laptops. Well, that's easier said than done, because in order to get a laptop that we think could last, you know, for the lease, the cycle of the lease, that would you know, be able to be maintained appropriately, because it's another important piece, is we've got to maintain all this stuff, and we don't have any more technology staff now than we did before we leased student devices. So our tech staff does a fantastic job. They run very lean, and they're very efficient, getting better all the time. But a good laptop, you're going to pay $800 to $1,000. It's going to last the time. So just, it's not financially feasible, and that's, you know, not our intent.
Mm-hmm.
So really, frankly, we're focused in on that because those are the items that we can afford, and we also know that they are going to teach the real-world skills that kids need.
All right. Once again, Superintendent Hillman with us, the Northfield School District. You work on the budget, you know, in a year in advance. You're working on the 1920 budget, but you have to get the calendar you're a couple years in advance with that, and you were talking, considering the proposed 2021 calendar last night.
That's right.
What's it looking like? Much different?
No, not a whole lot different. There's only a few days anymore that shift or move. One of the good things for us in 2020, we'll be opening some new schools. We'll be opening a new school and some renovated schools. Isn't that crazy to think about?
Yeah.
But Labor Day falls almost as late as it can that year, which is good for a construction summer.
Uh-huh.
So in 2020, school would start on Tuesday, September 8th, and it's projected that it would go all the way through Thursday, June 10th. And graduation being on the 6th. That is available, that calendar is available in the board packet on the website. We know parents really want to have these calendars a couple of years in advance because many companies require you to bid your vacation up to a year in advance. And so a couple of years ago, we moved from just approving next fall's calendar to approving the calendar for 2 years out. So the 2019-20 calendar is already on our website. You can check that out today. And then if this is approved at the February 11th board meeting, we'll post this as well and have the 2020-21 calendar done too.
You mentioned the new school briefly. Where are you in that process right now? Are you looking for bids for the architecture work? Or?
Oh, we already have the architect.
Okay.
We're on our way. And so we actually have a 37-member committee, what's called a core planning team for the Greenville Park School. That involves teachers, it involves parents, it involves community members without children, it involves some city officials. We have a really good cross-section of people. It involves some high school students on that committee to give their feedback. Great committee. The last thing we did is a week ago today, we actually took all of those people, plus a couple more, on tours of some other elementary schools. So we visited McKinley Elementary in Owatonna. We visited Rosa Parks Elementary in Mankato, Jackson Elementary in Shakopee, and East Lake Elementary in Lakeville. That's a District 196 school. Looked at that. We've got another meeting tomorrow. And then actually we already have very close to finalizing the team for the Bridgewater project, and that team will start 1 week from Thursday. Once we get that going, we get the Sibley group going. Once the Sibley group is going, we'll get the early childhood group going. And so we are rolling with five different projects.
Yeah, that's the scope of that, and a lot of exciting things will be happening in 2019 and 2020. So looking forward to it and beyond, I suppose, as well.
Hey, Jeff, thanks so much, and thanks for KYMN's service to the community, letting people know about cancellations, getting information out there. And remember, my mother-in-law always said that winter is not a fashion show, and these next 2 days are our days to remember that advice.
No doubt about it. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's my pleasure, Jeff. Thank you.
Superintendent of Schools, Dr. Matt Hillman of the Northfield School District. You're listening to 95.1 FM, AM 1080, KYMN Northfield. Terry's in with local news. Tim McNiff, news with a side of sports coming up.